I don't think that going out on your own is the solution per se, because I think the solution is never something outside of you. It has to come from within you.
Welcome back to Tech Life, a podcast to help you feel less stressed and more focused to calm the chaos of consulting. Let's be inspired by the possibility that we can be happier by doing less in an industry obsessed with constant optimization. I'm your host, April Rest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. So, you used to be with Salesforce, and a few years ago, you made the jump to be your own boss. And you help other people do the same, kind of break out of those walls of the corporate culture. First, I'd love if you could just tell us a little bit more about that journey. And then I've got some other questions that we can dive into.
So I was at Salesforce for a while, for 8 years. But I've been in sales, up until that point for about 15 and different types of sales capacities. And I was in the hospitality industry, the travel industry, tech, and some other tech as well. But the big thing that I was experiencing was this like constant feeling of never being enough. Pretty convenient being in sales, of course, because everything is measured and it's all about performance. Like literally your paycheck is tied to your performance. I'm like, very convenient setup, right? For capitalism. And so I was just really sick and tired of like having to prove my worth, right? And I got to this point, like, towards the end of my time at Salesforce. I had another stint at another company in between, and then I left the corporate world and started my business. But towards the end of my time at Salesforce, I started to realize that there was a product in me, right? Like I have all this experience. I have all these like life situations and work experience, all this kind of stuff. And I'd been trained as a coach and took certifications and blah, 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 whatever. And I was like, I know for sure there's like a product in me. I just don't know how to package it. I don't know how to tie it in a bow. I don't know how to present it, but like there's something that I could provide, like a service, a product, something, right? And I literally started like interviewing people that were already kind of in that space. So like I talked to John Barrows, if you know John Barrows. We were like connected through Salesforce. I talked to Katie, so Kevin Dorsey, and I just like, interviewed them to be like, because I knew I wanted to do something with women in tech sales. And so I started interviewing them about like, I know you're a man, but like, obviously you work with women. And what do you think like their biggest challenges? And like, I was trying to find the gap in the market, right? So I started doing that as I was still at Salesforce, because I knew like something was coming, you know? And then I left Salesforce, went to another company for about 15 months or so. And it was a pandemic that year. And so basically what happened was I was doing like 2021 planning. And I'm like, making all these OKRs and all these things that I'm going to have to accomplish this year. And I was like looking at it and I'm like, okay, even if I accomplished all of these flawlessly, perfectly, just just literally like bang on performance, how would I feel? And I was like, honestly, right? And by the way, it's never going to actually happen that way. It's never going to go perfectly. I'm never going to like hit all of these like home runs, and it was like meh, okay, I did it, but like, and it just didn't like the nothing lit up in me, right? And then I asked myself, okay, if I leave and I start my own coaching business, and let's pretend that I fail, whatever that means, because it's obviously dependent and subjective to some degree. If I fail by the end of this year, how will I feel? And I was like on fire in the best way possible, in the sense of like, I will be so effing proud of myself that I tried, that I bet on myself and that I just freaking tried, even if it failed, right? And when I laid it out that way, I was like, well, I guess I'm quitting my job. Because it's just like, how could I stomach showing up to work if I knew that even if I did an amazing job, it wouldn't matter to me, right? Not
Or
like,
how you feel.
right.
And I love this concept that I've heard you say twice now of how would I feel? So often we're taught, what do we think about it? Let's use our rational mind and less of
Pros and
like,
cons.
what is our inner voice telling us? What is our intuition telling us?
Yep.
Oh, I love this. Okay, so you are following this, how do I feel? How's this going to make me feel? And what is my body telling me? Leading you into your business.
Honestly, you're the first person to like point that out. I've obviously told that story quite a few times, and you're the first person to point out that I talked about how I felt. And I, it just hit me too, in the sense of like, you're right. I was going by not by my logical brain. I was going by like my sentient being and like my body and my emotions and my intuition, of course, like 100%. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, I'm getting chills. Because that's something I've been working on is how can I get out of my rational brain and more into what my intuition is really leading me towards.
It's a skill. Because then you might feel it, but then you do trust it.
Half and half.
Right.
I'm working on that.
Yeah.
It is indeed a skill. I have some funny stories that I'll save, but yeah. And so in your business now, helping others, follow that sense and helping others, specifically women in tech sales, is that right?
So it started off that way, and it's, what, men showed up as well, and I'm just as happy. There's no like distinction for me. So yeah, it's both men and women.
And with that, I saw that, you help people overcome imposter syndrome. Can you explain a little bit about what that is? What your own journey with that has been and how you help other people overcome that?
Yeah. Okay, so this is where I have like a very distinct opinion about imposter syndrome, because like the general rhetoric is like, it means that you feel like you're a fraud and someone's going to find you out, right? And sure, fine. But my own personal experience, and now working with like, over 100 clients now and helping them make sense of their imposter syndrome. I don't know if it's like an, I don't know if overcome is a nice marketing word, but like,
Work through,
yeah, that's exactly right.
improve.
Exactly.
I feel ya.
So I truly believe for a lot of us, maybe all of us, and that's where people get like, a little bit not so comfortable with this statement, but I think we feel imposter syndrome because we are being an imposter. Right. The whole thing is like, oh no, like you're gonna be a fraud, but you're not really a fraud. And I'm like, no, like you are a fraud in the sense, in the sense of you're being an imposter in your own life. Right. And so what I mean is like, we talked about this before we started recording, like, we've been chasing the carrot, right? The next job, the next paycheck, the bigger house, these carrots, right? And we've defined ourselves through these carrots, right? Through these bigger accomplishments and achievements, right? But yet every single one of my clients comes to me and they're like, yeah, so I did all of that and I'm not happy,
Right, that's like
So
exactly what
like
we're talking
clearly
about.
it doesn't work. It's not the actual strategy. We were told it was, and that's what happened to me. Like, okay, like when I get this title, when I make this, and when I buy a condo, and blah, 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 and it's like, huh, well, none of that worked. So, and then in order to get those things, we have to like play the part. You got to do the things, you got to, put on the show to make those things happen when those things aren't actually going to solve what's truly the problem, which is like how we feel about ourselves is
Right.
is the void that's trying to be filled, right? And so when I looked at my own experience and, you know, all of my clients like doing the whole song and dance of trying to achieve all this stuff and do all these things, but it's like I didn't want to actually be doing that, truthfully. I just wanted to feel good, and I thought those things would make me feel good.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't want to be talking to this CEO right now about freaking CRM. Like, I don't care about this, right? But I'm pretending to care because I'm doing the things and, you know, making the money and that, right? And so to some degree, like, you are an imposter because you're not truly aligned with what's actually true for you, right? Like, you're not being 100% authentic. You're probably not aligned with your values, right? Like, you probably don't even know what like your personal mission is. You're just kind of guessing at things, hoping that they will fill the void, right? Hoping that they will make you feel better than the icky feelings that you currently feel, right? And so to me, imposter syndrome is a great thing because if you've like gone to that point where you're feeling that, then it's a good indication that like there's some inner work that needs to be initiated, right? Because you will continue to feel that way, like you're putting on this song and dance and this performance when you don't understand yourself and you don't understand like what you value and what your strengths are and what your mission is and all these things that, you know, give you a sense of fullness and a sense of like wholeness. You will always then be searching outside of you to try to create that, and it doesn't work.
And what would you say? So, like, when I think about those moments where I've felt a constriction in my chest, or I've just felt like a complete imposter, there's times when I look back and it's like, well, yeah, I wasn't in a situation that was aligned with my values. Of course, I'm going to feel that way. And sometimes I think it's also been, I fell outside of my comfort zone. It might have been aligned with my values, but maybe it was, you know, back before I felt comfortable leading a client demo or whatever, public speaking, whatever. Let's just pick something. You know, I didn't always feel comfortable doing certain things, but I see that as a growth opportunity. How do you navigate discerning one from the other?
No, it's a good distinction, right? Because I think obviously imposter syndrome is like a bit of an umbrella, you know, word, if you will, or and what you just described of like, you know, doing something new that is aligned, that, you know, it is what you want, but it's new, and so it's not yet comfortable and it's not yet known, right? And so naturally, anything that's new to our brains will interpret as it is then dangerous, right? Because it doesn't know if you're able to navigate that situation, right? Even though, zoom out, nothing that we do in our lives is ever that physically dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, this presentation wasn't gonna kill you, you know?
For sure.
But your brain is flooding you with emotions that tell you that it could, right? And so, you know, that's, I think, natural self-doubt and natural fear that comes up with anything that's unknown. And so the work that I do is really about helping my clients understand how their brain works, right? And understand that it's totally normal that my brain feels fear in this moment because it's telling me that I could die from what's happened, right? And what I'm going to let it know is that, one, that's not true. And most likely what will happen is it'll feel pretty uncomfortable, and I might mess up my words or whatever, might look stupid, and then I'm gonna feel embarrassed, but I won't die from any of those feelings, and to connect back with, like, again, if this is aligned to your values and your bigger vision, right, of like this isn't just like, take the fear is one thing, but you zoom out and it's like, okay, this like little bit of fear that I have in this moment like means nothing in the greater scheme of your vision and your and what you want, right? It's like it's just like a little blip that we're gonna work through, and it might feel like uncomfortable for a couple days after because I'm gonna tell myself I sucked or whatever, right?
Like today's
Right.
podcast.
But like, I'm gonna, like, in a week, I won't even remember that I felt that way. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And the other thing that I like teach my clients, like train their brains to some extent, is to not side with their inner critic, right? So their inner critic starts to pipe in, like, rah, 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 you suck, all these things. And it's not to say, yeah, you know what, you're so right, you're such a piece of crap, blah blah blah, right? Like, you just add in and you're like, you know, you take their side in terms of like the game that's being played, right? You put on their jersey, right? And instead to say, thank you, inner critic, for your feedback and your thoughts. And actually, what I'm going to choose to tell myself and believe is that this is not the end of the world. I'm going to survive. Yes, it's uncomfortable, but I'm capable of managing this discomfort. Like, right? Like, you talk to it with what's actually more true, right? Which is like, you will survive. You've survived every single one of your hardest days until now. So, you know, logic would say you're gonna survive a couple more too. Right? And so it's understanding that and then teaching your brain when it does come up that like, we're gonna get through it. It's gonna be okay. I know you're freaking out. I hear you. I got it. We're gonna be good. It's gonna be fine, right?
Oh, I feel you. I talk to my inner child all the It's so good to be here with you. This is like you asked me why I started this podcast, and I didn't even think about all the really neat humans I'm going to get the chance to interact with. And I'm feeling very grateful that you're here. So thank you.
It's the reason why I want to one day start a podcast, but then I tell myself it's a lot of work.
It's been fun and very low effort so far, but we'll see what happens when I learn how to edit the recording. So we'll see. I'll keep you posted on that part. Very good. Okay. So you've been out of the corporate world 2-ish years, 3 years?
3 years.
3 years. What do you wish you had known back when you were still with Salesforce and other companies?
I guess I kind of said it, but thinking about this question earlier today, I wish I would have known what I was doing, in the sense of I wish I would have known I was seeking validation through my achievements and accomplishments to fill an inner void, and that it was never gonna work. But also, I wish I knew that everyone else was doing the exact same thing. And that we were, right? Like, that we're all just like in this sick cycle together, you know, because you naturally in sales compare yourself and be like, they have their shit together, they know what they're doing, I don't, I suck, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, right. No, they're doing the exact same. They're in this like exact same cycle as me. Like, they're not different and I'm not broken, right? And the cycle that we're all in is just like, honestly, like, sorry, my dog. Hold on.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
The cycle that we're all in, hold on. The cycle that we're all in is we're just like recreating our childhood dramas in the workplace. Never
Let's
knew
say
that.
that again. Let's say that again. So I'll take a deep breath.
Truly. Like, that really hit me when I started to work with clients. I was like, because obviously we do some childhood stuff, not a ton, but like we have to go there. And I was like, oh my God, we're all just reenacting and recreating the traumas that we experience in childhood in the workplace. And it makes sense. Right, in the workplace, like, you always have a manager, right? There's always a mommy or a daddy, right? And like, they're the gatekeepers, right? They tell you what you can and cannot do, right? So there's like this weird power dynamic that exists everywhere in our life until our, like, and including our career, right? So like, as kids, obviously we have the mommy and the daddy who are the authority figures. We go to school, right? We have the teachers who's now the mommy and the daddy, and then you go to the corporate world and now you have your managers who are the mommy and the daddy. And this is why, you know, we've all seen this freaking post on LinkedIn 6,000 times, which is like, people don't leave companies, they leave bad managers, right?
Right.
Which is true, but what they're saying is like they're what's it called? Like becoming emancipated from their bad mommy and daddy, you know? They're trying to get out of the bad dynamic that was created and probably was created because of both of their childhood traumas triggering each other. I didn't know that at the time. I was just like, gotta keep going, gotta be better, 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 you know?
No, I can relate to the reenactment of the childhood traumas in the workplace. So what, like, I know for some people, solopreneurship or becoming an entrepreneur, like, that's on the table for them. They believe in that. They're willing to take that risk. I've come across people who view it as too much of a risk. So I've got two questions for you. One would be, like, do you believe that that's on the table? Well, I guess let me back up. Do you believe that, like, going out on your own is the answer? Or what do you think that solution is for this problem that we have, where we're constantly looking to external validation professionally to fill this void that we have? Like, what would be your solution for that?
So I don't think that going out on your own is the solution per se, because I think the solution is never something outside of you. It has to come from within you, right? Like if we leave our job and go and create a business, we're just going to recreate our childhood trauma in that business too, essentially, right? So like nothing outside of us is going to solve what's the void, you know, that we're feeling inside of us. So no, I don't think just going and starting a business is the solution. I think it's about doing your own inner work, be that through like therapy, coaching, like self-reflection, meditation. Like there's obviously like 10,000 modalities that you can use and, you know, find the one that works for you. Because, you know, even for me, like there's apparently like 112 different ways to meditate or something. And so like when people are like, oh, it didn't work for me, it's like, okay, well, like the one of 112 didn't work, like there's other ones, right? So find the one that feels right for you. But what I want to advise, right, is that seeking the solution from something outside of you is never going to be the solution, right? Because there, listen, of course, we both know people that are like very happy to be in the corporate world, right? Because their relationship with the corporate world has been healed, right? Like they're not seeing it as like, I need to give everything to this place and prove myself and blah, 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 right? Like they're like, no, this is like the parameters of my role. I do it well. I'm like, that's it. If they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. Like, whatever. Like, it's all good, you know? Like, this is not the definition of who I am, right? And that's another piece. Like, we create our identity out of our jobs. So if that's happening, that's also an indication of like, you might want to do some inner work there. Because we're kind of projecting this identity to something outside of us versus like insourcing our own identity.
I think I mentioned, maybe I didn't, I can't remember, that I spent a few years living in Argentina, and this notion of, like, we work to sustain our life was something that I learned down there. And when I came back to the States and I got my first job in more of a corporate setting, it was pretty much the opposite. It was like, you know, we're alive, we exist to work, we exist to produce, we exist to play our part in, you know, capitalism. And it took me a long time to even get to the point where I was cognizant that my whole identity and self-worth was wrapped up into what I did for a living, how much money I made, what my title was, and what my peers and superiors thought of me. Years. just
Oh, yeah.
to even recognize that, let alone the rest of the years it took
Yeah.
to unravel all of that. Oh, goodness, I have chills from that because it is such a mindset shift, if you will, to okay, how would I approach work differently if I thought that I'm just doing this to support my lifestyle? I'm doing this to support the life I want to lead versus putting my all into it.
Well, and I think what's hard about that is that because, those people are few and far between in the corporate world, right? And I remember being at Salesforce, there was some of those people, but this is how people talked about those people, right? Which is really, they're gonna leave at 5 o'clock, or they're not gonna try harder, or they're not gonna put their all into this, and they're not gonna make all these sacrifices. It was like they were failing, even though they were not bottom performer, the whole thing, but they took their vacations and did their thing, and they had boundaries and basically a healthy relationship with work. And everyone's like, what? That person is yeah, exactly.
It's like
Exactly.
actually they're doing the job they were hired for
Right.
and not more for free. But
Exactly, right?
they're labeled a slacker. Yeah.
And so for people that are, less mentally fit, if you are mentally strong, of course you're going to fall into the trap of well, I better get, I better do more because people are going to talk about me that way, or or I'm going to be seen a certain way, right? And the people that are talking about others that way are just traumatized as well. They're they're stuck in the whole conditioning, and so it's a vicious cycle, right? And listen, it exists in the solopreneur world as well, right? I see these solopreneurs on LinkedIn, and they're I made $1 million in 67 hours, and you're like, okay, just relax, thank you for this announcement so humbly that you're giving us, right? But that's just one, probably not true, so stop. But also two, cool, that was your goal, great, celebrate it, fine. But it don't make it seem like that is what the pinnacle of success is, right? And that if you're not doing that, you're doing something wrong, right? Because it's like I mean, there's the same kind of comparison in the solopreneur world on LinkedIn, because you see all these people that are making all this money and doing all these things, and again, if you're not mentally strong and fit, you're like, holy crap, I better do more. I'm a slacker. I better do more. I better try more. Better, right? All these things. And again, this is why it always comes back to doing your inner work and knowing yourself, because it's like you have to zoom out and you have to bring it back to yourself, which is like, but what is my goal? Right? And what is my vision? And what is my mission? Right? And as a solopreneur, that is literally true. Right? Obviously, it's still true as an individual, at a company, right? You're still an individual, that has a vision and a goal, right? But sometimes it feels harder for that to be as important when you're supposed to be touting the corporate vision and the corporate values. And if those values aren't aligned to yours, now you have this tension, right? And this friction where you're like, I don't really want to build this vision as much as you guys do, right?
I think going back to just like that notion that we all are defining success differently. And I know this is going to sound so cliche of the like, I don't even remember what the quote is about comparing yourself to others, but it's so true. Like it can lead us so astray. And I've been there, like I'm totally guilty of doing that. And just, I would say very recently, like that's been top of mind of, okay, like my comparison, if I'm going to do it at all, needs to be the April of yesterday. Like not Bobby, not Barbara, not, peers or whoever. Like what matters to me, and I've done countless exercises of like when I'm on my deathbed, like what am I gonna have regrets of? Or like how do I want people to remember me? And like North Star, visioning exercise, all the things to try to really ground myself in what is that vision and like how is that aligned to where I'm at and where I'm going. So I'm curious, with the solution to this problem so many of us face of doing the inner work. Is there, I know it's not simple, right? Like there's never, I mean, there might be a simple solution, but typically it's not easy. But is there something like that you offer up your clients or you offer up your friends of like, here's a tact, something tactical like our listeners could do today, whether they're a solopreneur or, working as an employee to help with that inner work process.
So I think so I'll give you the one that I always give because it is the most simple, but I can maybe add on like a bonus too. So I think one of the practices that like literally changed my life and there's science behind why it does is gratitude journaling. So I follow like the 5 minute journal protocol, right? It's 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night. Listen, do I always do the nighttime? Of course not. I really like the morning more than anything, but the principle though is like you literally can't be like angry, anxious, mad, and upset and grateful at the same time, right? Like gratitude kind of trumps a lot of that. And so starting your day from a place of reflecting on what you are grateful for and what would make the day a great day, right? What would feel the best for you, right? It just puts so much intentionality into what I did, like my everyday. And also like just as like a productivity hack, like also like really helped me focus on what was important and what I actually wanted to do that day. Because the other thing is like there's infinite amount of to-dos that we will have and that we always have. And it's like a myth that we will ever be on top of everything, right?
Inbox zero.
Yeah, okay. So thank you. Guess what happens when you're at inbox zero and an email comes in, right? So good, like all that work for nothing, right? And so when you just take these 5 minutes in the morning to think about, okay, I have not even 24 hours. You're not even awake for 24 hours, right? Like I have the next like 16 hours, whatever it is, right? What is the most important things that need to get done or whatever it is, right? Today. And it's three things, right? And some of those things can be like not doing these other things that I think I should be doing, right? Like, but just putting that intentionality about what you're going to focus on, oh my God, it's life-changing. Because then when you do it, guess what you get? A little treat of dopamine. Because you said you were going to do something and then you did it. And like, ooh, you get a little piece of dopamine for that, right? And so that makes you feel good. And then you're like, ooh, I feel good. Wow, that was so easy to feel good. Truly, it's actually that easy, right? But then over time, what I do with the gratitude journaling is like, it really becomes data, right? So I'll go back and I'll look at like, okay, what are the things? What's the trend for what I say I'm grateful for, right? Right now in my life, it's like my dog. Hello, my dog. And my partner, right? Like those are the things that come up the most. Like, so years ago when I didn't have this dog and this partner, it was like, like me time and like working out and like, basically like doing my inner work, like my self-development stuff, like that was like always the things, right? Or like connection with friends, stuff like that. And so it's like you then start to see the trend and you're like, oh wow, these are really important and necessary things for me. So how do I start building my days and my weeks and my life so that these things are just naturally included in them, right? It like helps you a blueprint of like how to have every day be a good day because you actually know what feels good, right? So like that honestly has dictated how I structure every single day of my life because I know exactly what makes me feel good and I know exactly what doesn't make me feel good. And so I just take out the stuff that doesn't feel good and keep the stuff that does. Like, it's not rocket science, right? But when you don't have that data, it can sometimes be hard to trust yourself and believe what does feel good. You're like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's not always true. But you're like, no, it's always true. Like, you always talk about the same things. So it is true, right? So that's one. And that's like anyone can do it. You could pick up the 5-minute journal anywhere, or you can just literally find the template online and create your own notebook, right? I think the other thing too is really around language. So I'll give you an example. So one of my clients, he was, his kind of story is always like, there's so much to do and I like feel behind and like I'm not crushing it, but I'm like trying to, I'm trying to not let it get to me and like so on and so forth. And so I picked up on the fact of like, there was like this ultimate paradise in his mind of like crushing it, right? And I'm like, I'm just gonna take a wild guess. And I'm gonna say, you probably feel like you're crushing it maybe 5% of the time. Am I right? And he was like, yeah, that's probably fair, right? And so I'm like, okay. But you are the one defining what crushing it means, right? He's like, yes. I'm like, okay, right. So tell me, why make it so hard to feel good? Right? Like you've put these parameters around crushing it that are clearly highly unattainable, right? But you created the parameters. So you can easily change the parameters, right? So he was telling us that, he did this presentation and he felt it went good, but he didn't crush it. So he didn't allow himself to feel great about it because he didn't crush it, whatever that meant, right? And I'm like, okay, like given all the things on your plate and what you're doing, like, dude, good is really crushing it. You know what I mean? Like, the language that you're using is the problem, not your circumstances, right? Like, how we are defining things is the problem, not the actual fact that we have so much work, right?
Right. Yeah, it goes back to that mindset and the inner work and the self-love, and I love that. It's like we're the judge, the lawyer, and the jury all in one. And how can we let ourselves celebrate a little bit more, feel
Yeah.
good a little bit more?
Because we like hold the good feelings hostage, right? Basically say, here's all the conditions that need to be met. It's like a hostage negotiator, seriously. Like, here's all the conditions that need to be met until I let go of some of these hostages, aka let you feel good feelings, right? Like,
Right.
I need this from you. I need this from you. I need this from you and this from you. And if you don't get it to me by 5 p.m., that's it. Someone's going down, right? And you don't get to feel good.
I'm curious, why are we so conditional with ourselves?
It's wild, right?
Where did we learn that one? What trauma was that related to?
Universal trauma to
I mean,
that.
I laugh, but it's like a real question, you know?
Yeah. That's
Ay,
a whole nother podcast. I can talk about that
ay, ay.
too, but yeah.
Wow. So if listeners want to learn more about you or how to work with you, where can they find out more?
Yeah. So I hang out on LinkedIn the most. Of course, we should get LinkedIn to sponsor this podcast.
Let's do it. How do we do that?
Yeah, so I hang out on LinkedIn the most. I post 5 days a week. My partner like teases me. He's like, you're everywhere on LinkedIn. So if you want me to show up everywhere for you, just follow me because that's what will happen, basically. And I share more insight about imposter syndrome, starting your own business, and like really about like betting on yourself. That's my big thing. It's just like, you are already great and worth it and deserving and all the things that we have to try to qualify and condition ourselves, right? But like, dude, just bet on yourself. See what happens. You're gonna survive. It's gonna be fine, right?
I love that. Yeah, we will survive 99.9% of the time.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite quote?
Yes.
Oh, okay, give it to me.
Okay, so the backstory of the quote is it's during the commencement speech that Jim Carrey did. And he talks about his how his father was a hilarious man and could have been a great comedian if he had only bet on himself, right? And so instead, he took the safe route and his dad became an accountant. The least funny and fun job, right? And because he thought it was safe. And then he got fired from that safe job. And that really like hit Jim Carrey's family like financially. Like, they went from having like a nice kind of steady life to like, things got bad type of thing. So he says, I learned a great deal from my father, none of which was more important than this lesson, which is you can fail at something that you don't even like. So you might as well try at the thing that you love.
Like, let's just take that in. I
It's
love that. I love that.
literally the quote that inspired me to quit my job and start my coaching business. 'Cause I was like, I could totally mess this whole yearly plan, OKRs. I can mess the whole thing up. I could fail miserably at it. And I don't even care about it. So like, why would I do that? Why would I like risk that, when I could go and try to build a business around the thing that I love the most in the world, which is coaching, and I could fail at it, but at least I freaking tried at the thing that I love, And again, like, what a failure, I would just try again.
Right, exactly.
Like,
It's a big learning lesson. Like, are you really failing if you're learning so much?
yeah. And even though like you failed once doesn't mean you can do it again, Like all these like stories about actors who like, I mean, who's the one? I think it's Morgan Freeman, who like didn't become a famous actor until he was like 45 or something, like failed up until that point. Like so many of
I
these stories.
don't know that.
Yeah. Also, I
I
think
don't
it's
know
Morgan
that.
Freeman. There's a couple others, but yeah, tons. The other one that I like too is actually, Jim Halpert from The Office.
Is that
Like John.
Pam's husband?
Yeah.
Yes,
Okay.
yeah.
So he like moved to New York with like no money, like was like, Mom, I'm doing it, like I'm gonna become an actor. And she was like, listen, you got 1 year, like I'm gonna support you for 1 year, right? And it was like literally like the 363rd day, essentially. And he was like, this was his last kind of resort. And he got the role as Jim Halpert in The Office. And like obviously his life is completely different now. Completely changed.
Yeah, you gotta put on yourself. Oh, I love that. I love that though. Like, and that's what I try to remember too is like, especially with all the tech layoffs, it's like none of us are safe, you know? It's, we're not safe. We're all dispensable, which I think is even more of a reason to do that inner work, to set those boundaries at work, to work on your identity, because it's like, a lot of us are working so hard to reach this goal that could easily fall away. And it's like that goal isn't even going to fulfill us, number one. And number two, like, I know plenty of businesses that wouldn't hesitate if it would benefit them to lay off team members. So why do people feel that they need to give so much more above what they're contracted to do?
Well, and there's a very simple reason why they feel that way is because they don't feel like they have any other options. If you knew you had options, you would not do that. Not to say you would leave immediately, but you would definitely engage differently if you knew you had options. And here's the thing, everybody has options. They just don't think they do.
But it's a scarcity mindset.
Well, what else would I do? It's the only thing I've done. Like, I don't know how to do anything else. It's like, first of all, there's a thing called transferable skills, number one.
Another one.
And then there's a thing called storytelling. And if you can tell the right, like a good story, you can get anything you want. Right? So that's my solution to that problem.